Sophie Savage was 48 years old, happily married and mother to a 4-year-old daughter when she was diagnosed with late-stage lung cancer. Since that shocking diagnosis, she has been on a journey of healing and renewal that has reshaped her life, she believes for the better. Her new book, The Cancer Whisperer, The Unlikely Gifts of Cancer, chronicles her extraordinary relationship with cancer and the very effective methods she has used for dealing with the fear, anger, denial, and grief. Again, the name of the book is The Cancer Whisperer, and it's a great pleasure to welcome Sophie Savage to the roundtable. Sophie, thank you very much for being here.
Thank you for having me. I'm glad to be here.
Very nice to have you with us. You were 48 years old when you received your diagnosis. Give us a sense of at what point through this journey that you decided that you wanted to write about it and share some of the stops along the way.
I think it started quite early on. I noticed in Britain we're not very good at feeling our feelings and showing our feelings, and I have a background in psychology and mindset change, and what I found is that I was sitting in hospital wards and waiting rooms, and you could feel the fear stalking the corridors and sitting like a fog over people's heads, but everyone was numbed out and in shock, and I was often the only person with tears rolling down my face, and the nurse would run over to kind of try and stop me crying. And I remember her saying to me, you know, are you okay? And I said, I think I might be the only person here who is, because what better time to feel and express what you're feeling? So I started by writing a blog because I wanted to show that it was okay to be vulnerable, okay to be frightened. And my blog kind of picked up. It got followers. People started saying, yes, that's how I think. That's how I feel. Thank you. And it really went from there. And 10 months later, I wrote The Cancer Whisperer for a number of reasons. But it really started almost, I would say, within 6 weeks of my diagnosis, I began writing about my experience.
You write about these methods that you employed and that you use for dealing with the anger and fear and denial and grief. And for all of those reasons that the tears were rolling down your face at the doctor's office, At what point did you realize that you were the one creating those in the sense that you had it within you to do that without outside influence?
Well, it's been my profession for 25 years to... I've been running workshops and coaching people on how to deal with their fear and their... and life-changing events for a long time. So that's my expertise anyway. And even with that expertise, this was as steep a mountain as I have ever had to climb. And I looked around for books that helped in this territory, and there are a lot of cancer books. There are some inspiring stories. There are books about wellness and treatments and medical stuff. But I couldn't find anything that took a cancer patient by the hand and taught them how to navigate the emotional and psychological territory that comes with this diagnosis. And because I have the background that I have, and because I'm a good writer, and I'd always wanted to write since I was 10, it just seemed rude not to, if I can say it like that.
Of course.
Like, I need to write this book.
You point out in the book that being a cancer whisperer means two things. What are those two things?
Gosh, you've got me on the spot there if I can remember the two things, but I'm just going to speak from my heart about what those two things are. Firstly, cancer whispering is a challenge to the current narrative about cancer. So at the moment, cancer, and has been since Richard Nixon declared the war on cancer, for political capital, we've been at war with cancer, and all the metaphors and the language is about battling the disease and fighting it and smashing it, and that's how we talk about it. Now, I found that deeply unhelpful. It creates a very angry, defiant, even resentful mindset that in itself is stressful. It does a great injustice to the cancer patients who, even if they die, have incredible victories along the way. So I wanted to change the narrative into that cancer is not an enemy. It's an illness, and we need to listen to our illnesses because maybe they have something to teach us if we're willing to pluck the plums from the tree, the unlikely gifts from the tree. We need to be proactive about that. But all illnesses are awakeners in some way, I believe. So I think we need to have a much gentler relationship with this disease so that we can learn from it and be transformed by it instead of terrified of it. So that was probably the primary reason I called the book The Cancer Whisperer, so we could change that relationship. But also because I think cancer is not just physical. I think it's a mental, emotional, psychological, in my view, a spiritual challenge, but that might not be your cup of tea, but the rest will do, as well as a physical challenge. And I think we need to meet it at all those levels. And at the moment, you're treated as a patient with a disease, not as a person with dis-ease. And that's the other part, that's the other half of the story.
You do make the point in the book that you have cancer. It does not have you. You use the term a few times in the book about radical responsibility, that you should take radical responsibility for tracing its root causes, that you should take radical responsibility for directing your own treatment. Those are very strong words of radical responsibility.
Well, let me say what I mean by radical, first of all. So I don't mean radical as in revolutionary and rebellious and, you know, I mean radical as in the word radical means get to the root of the thing. That's the Latin. Radical means get to the root
right.
of something. That's what I mean by that. So, and take responsibility as in your ability to respond, responsibility. So people often say, why me? And some people say, why me? Because they're saying, I haven't done anything to deserve this. And some people say, why me? Because the subtext is, I've done a lot to deserve this. You know, they either blame themselves or detach from it. Now, you're not responsible for your genetics if you have the BRCA gene, for example. That's not on you. And I don't think it helps to blame yourself for anything. But I do think it helps to ask the question, what is my part in the problem? And what is my part in the solution? I may not be able to cure my cancer. In fact, it's highly unlikely. I'm stage four. It's terminal. That's what I'm reminded of frequently. But I can take responsibility for how I travel this road. And I can also take responsibility for the causes I may have played a part in. So that's what I mean by that. For example, I had eating disorders when I was younger. I did serious damage to my body in my early 20s and teens, and I think I sowed the seeds right there. So that's for me to say, I did that to myself. Now how am I going to treat myself from now on? And I've come a long way since those days, but nonetheless, that's the kind of thing that I think we can do. How am I eating? Am I exercising? How do I treat my body? What can I do to take some power here? So
but
I think that's very important.
It certainly is. I'm curious, though, and even in your using of the word terminal, that word has such power. How do you get that, and maybe you don't, of get it out of your head in the sense of I am going to work through this even though that is the end result, that there is a terminal nature to this disease?
Sure. That's a great question. Well, firstly, I needed to deeply come to terms with that disease, with that word, because part of coming to terms with that word meant coming to terms with the reality of my situation. And I worked hard to do that. In fact, my blog initially was called My Journey of Wellness with Terminal Illness. And I wore that word like a dress because I needed to get really accept what was happening. Once I'd done that, I took the metaphor off, not the dress off, but I needed to shed it, actually, because it becomes an inevitability that I'm not particularly willing to accept. I don't know even what that means. We're all terminal, you know, we're all terminal. any one of us can be taken out at any moment. So, and as happens. So I needed to first embrace it, and then I needed to shed it, actually, and go, well, I'm ill, I'm very ill, and the chances are this will take me out. But I don't know when, I don't know how long, and I know people with stage four who recover. So it's an unknown for me. I'm under no illusions about my situation. I did deeply come to terms with it. But I put terminal in inverted commas now because it applies to all of us.
Does age matter in the sense that you're 48 when you got diagnosed with the stage four lung cancer? And by all measures, I say as someone who just turned 49, that's young, right? And so that has to play a role in it, that you feel as though you are losing, as you mentioned, there are no guarantees, of course, but you are losing a large chunk of what is often thought of as a full life.
I think that's absolutely true, Joe. It struck me in two ways in particular. Firstly, my daughter was 4 years old at the time. She's now nearly seven. She was my late life miracle. I'd been told I couldn't have kids, and I had her. So to be facing this diagnosis with the daughter of my dreams was devastating. But also the most motivating thing I could have been given by the universe, because I think if I hadn't had her, I might have checked out, actually. I might have not put myself through all the things I've put myself through to stay alive. So she inspires me to do what it takes. And that's a very bittersweet thing that's going on there. And secondly, I was riddled with regret when I was diagnosed of all the things I hadn't done and the dreams I hadn't fulfilled and the relationships I hadn't mended. And that was much stronger for me than my fear was my grief about what I hadn't done in my life. So that's one of the reasons I wrote this book, because I wanted to be a writer since I was 10 years old, and it took cancer to really get me to put pen to paper. And now I'm an author. That's my full-time job now, and that's a dream come true. So now the best I've got is to treasure the moments and treasure the days and maximize them as best I can.
You use the word courage, or the word courage is used in the subtitle of the book. Do you feel courageous at this point?
Funny question, that, because a lot of cancer patients say, don't call me courageous, I didn't choose this, I just do what has to be done. They don't even like to be called courageous. It's as if courage is something, it's like you willingly take a risk to do something. But actually, courage is a response to great pain and grief. Courage, it's of the heart. So, yes, I put that word very deliberately in my title, because I found my courage through this experience. I didn't know how much courage I had until I got this diagnosis. And I want to encourage other patients to claim their courage and call it that, because that is what it is. I've met some of the bravest people on this earth over the last 2 years, and I've seen courage that's second to none.
I'm struck, and was struck in reading the book, by the fact that we can talk about this on the level of how we psychologically deal with cancer, and how we can become a cancer whisperer, and how we can deal with those elements with the disease. But of course, there's also the physical elements, which on many days make you feel really crappy.
True.
Does that ever overshadow all that you know, and then all that you believe, and then all you have written about? Because some days the body just ain't working.
Oh yeah. I mean, I'm no superhuman. I'm a human being, and I have very dark days. I know how to find my way through the darkness, and I know how to find the light in the darkness. That's been an extraordinary thing. When it's really, really dark, you start to see light in the darkness. It's an amazing thing. But I have very dark days. I have very despairing days. I had a scan last April. They found 27 brain tumors in my head. I'd got rid of all my brain tumors. Suddenly I had 27 again, small tumors. You know, when that kind of thing happens, you know, and I had some brutal treatment for those tumors that worked. But the pain was just excruciating. It was like having a burnt brain for several weeks. And there are days you just lie in bed and breathe and let people care for you and let yourself have your despair. And then you can stand up again. If you ride over your despair and you be positive in the face of everything, that's not authentic and it's not helpful.
The name of the book is The Cancer Whisperer, Finding Courage, Direction, and the Unlikely Gifts of Cancer. Sophie Savage, I thank you so much for sharing with us. I thank you for sharing that courage and direction and being with us this morning. Our thoughts are with you.
My absolute pleasure.
Thank you so much.
You're
again,
welcome.
The name of the book, The Cancer Whisperer, Finding Courage, Direction, and the Unlikely Gifts of Cancer. The book is published by Plume. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.